everyone, and welcome to Owl's Wisdom, a War Machine and Hordes podcast, the steampunk Power Adventures game by Proactive Press. My name's Jamie, and I play Minions. I'm here with...
Chris, and Little Chris, and I play Crix.
And I'm Chris, and I play Retributionist Sarah.
This is going to be a little bit confusing, of course. We tried to deconflict all of our names, but clearly there's been an issue here. So, yeah, we've got... Little Chris, as he's known here, from the previous episode, along in, and we've got our other Chris from our meta coming along to join us and talk about Retribution today. What we've got for today's episode is something a little bit different. We're going to take effectively two factions and kind of not quite pit them against each other to say which one's best, but to talk through our processes of how we're pairing things up. So for myself and for Little Chris, we've both got a fair amount of experience with the Minions, and we've also got a lot of experience with Rhett from Christy. We're going to have to sort this out, aren't we, for so our names.
Big Chris. We'll call him Big Chris and call me Little Chris. There you go, easy. we'll let everyone guess why.
Yes, I'm sure that can only end well. Congratulations, your names are Big Chris and Little Chris accordingly. Well, seeing as me and Little Chris did our backgrounds last time, Big Chris, how about talk us through just how long you've been playing for, what factions you're playing for, and just a bit about you and the game, please.
Okay, so I've been playing War Room since the back end of Mark 2. Just before Mark 3 was announced. Have dabbled in other factions in between, so played a bit of Menarth, played a bit of Circle, played a Grimkin, never for long periods of time, and kind of always come back to Retribution. So consider myself a fairly competitive player. I'm going to WTC this year with Team England. Under Ryan as the captain. So, yeah, that's it, really.
Just say congratulations, mate, on making the team. And I'd say, you know, it's not just a fairly competitive player. That is an accolade, and you're very much deserving of that place.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear. I think most of us across the UK will know you for Rhett particularly. I think that's been your maybe the faction closest to your heart.
Yeah, it's definitely been my bread and butter. As I say, I usually get a bit fed up and go try something else for 2 months, but never really lasts long.
He's always back. They always drag you back.
Yeah. We'll figure out some other jank or something else interesting.
Yeah.
Kind of an ongoing joke in our meta where Chris will go off and do something else, like play around with a bit of Scorn or whatever. And we'll be like, yay! And he'll come back to Rhett, and everyone goes, boo.
I mean, he's. I'd love to point out that was wrong, but there is always a bit of a collective, here we go again, you know.
Here we go again. Here comes the bullshit. keep your casters safe, folks. He's coming.
I think the one time I've seen Chris actually excited about another faction was that silly Xerxes 1 double cats list. I think that's mostly because you could shout meow as you move them up the table.
Yeah, I was still pretty excited. I'm still pretty excited about Scorn, but focus has to come down for WTC. So Retribution has to be my priority for the forthcoming future.
Yeah,
you still have fun playing them, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Very much so.
Yeah, of course you do.
They're not going anywhere.
No, and quite rightfully so, really, I think. It's probably, you know, an interesting observation, really, for a lot of people going to WTC and what it means to those players as well is... This is a hobby. This is something we all do for fun. But for people playing the WTC quite often, they will pick a faction, even just a caster or a pairing, and just play dozens and dozens of games of them over weeks and weeks and weeks. And for me, that's extremely difficult to do. I've got I can barely keep control of the same faction for more than 30 seconds, let alone the same casters. So it's a real kind of testament to yourself and the other team players as well, who are willing just to we won't say stifle the creativity, that's the wrong word for it, but to stop dabbling in the sprinklers with other shiny things and actually settle into those casters, I think.
It takes a certain discipline to focus, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think the big thing is, like, in a 3-round steamroller, a 4-round steamroller, you can get away with a lot more in a pairing. So you can run a little bit of jank along with a metalist to a certain degree. Whereas when you go into WTC, you know there's going to be a certain level of kind of, it is effectively where the meta is created, or kind of the players that are creating the meta across the world. So you kind of have to be knowledgeable about your own stuff in particular, and knowing what else everybody else is going to be throwing at you.
Yeah. I think this year could be particularly interesting because historically the WTC has always taken place in Europe, somewhere on the continent. And because of the way it works with the countries, we've always seen, you know, two, sometimes three teams coming from each country. But because of the sheer number of countries in Europe, it becomes a very European-dominated meta for all the crazy ideas that we start seeing on the continent. And you get, you know, one or two of them coming across the pond, out from the Canadians and the Americans. But what we've got this year, because they've now, I believe they've opened up the teams now to submit more, and the USA teams could be potentially as many as five teams across, I think.
Taking over.
Yeah, we'll probably see a much stronger presence from the US meta, I suppose, and or certainly, you know, the US and Canadian meta, and how that spreads across. Just there'll be, you know, there's another couple of teams from that. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, it's nice to see a bigger variety of players, because I imagine they're one of the biggest metas out there. So be interesting to see what they can bring.
Yeah, definitely. It's really exciting to kind of see that. It's been the first WTC in a couple of years, and the game has had some pretty significant shifts along the way. We've also got this real cool wild card of Orgoth as well that's going to appear midway, and we'll see if
anyone... Can't wait.
We'll see. I'm not sure that'll be out. They'll be out in time for Listlock, personally. We'll see what that situation is, because obviously...
Have they given any kind of communication on that as to when they're expecting it to come out? Or?
As far as I'm aware, not yet.
Nothing specific. Yeah.
It might be pending on things like Kickstarter and that, and obviously there's been some widespread shipping issues for a whole bunch of reasons, not just for us on the European side, but I think through America as well. So we will see. It'll be really cool, interesting to see where the game's at and how that's developing from there. Cool. Okay. So what we're going to do for this cast then? So we're going to start by just having a bit of an overview, a bit of a discussion between us about the two factions we've mentioned first, so Retribution of Syrah and then Minions, looking at what are the real standouts in that. This could be theme list, could be models, could be casters, just a general play style. And then what we're going to do is with Little Chris as sort of a judge between us, Big Chris and I are going to talk about having sort of two general list pairs and talk about how we would go deciding what we would want to drop into each other if we were to face it off against each other. And we'll try this maybe two or three times with just caster pairings and general pairings. And maybe at the end we'll just talk a little bit about general advice. So if you're a Retribution player and you're thinking about a Minions matchup, these are some of the tools you might want to consider, and vice versa. So hopefully it's informative to particularly those factions we're discussing, but also more generally in terms of this is how you might go about thinking about a pairing process. And straight up, this is all entirely our opinions of three blokes on the internet at this point. You know, this is certainly not the only way to look at these matchups, and we will have definitely missed aspects. So please let us know what your thoughts are.
Bonus points if Jamie can come up with a Minions pair that doesn't involve trolls as well.
Yeah, we should probably talk about it, shouldn't we, really? Yeah, trolls and Minions, the lines have blurred over the last year or so, haven't they?
One way of putting it.
Very much so. It's brought a lot of flexibility to both factions, which, if you turn back the clock, 18 months ago, so a lot would argue that trolls were struggling before Gunny 2, etc. came out. Minions weren't, I don't think, particularly. But yeah, I think it's added a lot of depth to both factions, mainly because you've opened up both factions almost completely to one another. So
I think it's absolutely stunning, like the kind of impact it's had, really, I think, on both factions. I mean, you look at them now, and you saw the Chaosborn tier list that came out the other day. Not just that, of course. You think about where trolls were, like you say, 18, 24 months ago. I mean, I think people were roundly saying they were probably the worst faction in the game for a very long period. You look at it now, and they've just gone strength to strength, and I think it just comes from the sheer breadth of coverage that the casters and Vengeance of Dunia, for example, like, you know, have as an impact on both of them. They've just got access to so many good models now and so many different combos, and throwing Riot Quest alongside that, the kind of gains I've had from it, and they've got a degree of adaptability that maybe I'm going a step too far here, perhaps, I don't know, but they've got a degree of adaptability that maybe even some of the major factions don't have.
Yeah, I think I'd agree, to be honest, and there's some reasons for that, which I think we can go into. In fact, it's probably, well, we'll set out the stacks for stock first, and then we'll probably carry off the back of it into minions. So for the purpose of this one, we're going to talk about minions specifically, as in you're playing the minion side. So you won't have this won't be looking at Storm of the North, Creel Company, any of the troll themes. This is going to be Vengeance of Dunia. And I'm also going to caveat it as well that all these pairings will include some minion caster. So whether it'll be one of the Gatormen, or whether it'll be one of the Pharaoh ones. And the reason being is, if you take two troll casters, you'll be taking them both Avengers of Dunia. You're just sort of unnecessarily cutting down what the faction can do, and that feels more appropriate when we get a troll expert onto the cast to talk about that there. So all the minion pairings that we'll discuss will have a minions caster on there. So with that in mind, let's have a little dive back into that then. So what makes minions so strong that they've been rated pretty highly for quite some time now, as you said?
I think it's flexibility, personally. You've obviously got probably the largest selection of solos of any faction in the game, and obviously all benefiting from friendly faction benefits, where most factions would not kind of benefit from that. And just the utility that, as Little Chris was saying, that you can just pull from all those different kind of abilities and skills that they have would always be my opinion, and things I've been jealous of playing Retribution with my four or five merc choices.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think the first thing you have to look at is the nature of minions and mercenaries, which is they've got a much wider pool of things they can bring in, because a lot of the new releases are minions and mercs, and they also become friendly factions, so there's some particularly unique combinations that you get from bringing those together. That strength that gets compounded more by Will Work for Food as a theme force. So Thornful Alliance and Blindwater Congregation fundamentally name all the models that that go into them, specifically Gatormen or Pharaoh. And what this does is it fundamentally caps what can go in those themes. Now, PP may go and add in additional models like the Death Archon in retrospectively, or the Dunian Archon, but that's going to require an active choice. Whereas Lord of Foods specifies very little. And when we saw the rise of Archons, particularly the Death Archon, but just generally friendly faction Archons, that was a really big strength of minions, to be able to take those powerful new solos coming out of Ryquex, coming out of the Oblivion updates, and their ability to take the whole smorgasbord, make them friendly faction, just synergize, really set them soaring at the height of Archon machine.
And I think it's, you look at Thornfall, you look at Blindwater. I know that we had the dynamic update, and maybe I'm not going to too much of a bitch fest about this, but but I mean, fundamentally, those two particular specific themes didn't really get very much help at the time of the update. There were a few tweaks here or there, or general changes in points cost that helped them in one way or another, but overall the fundamental problems with them just, you know, weren't helped. And I think a big part of that, we've heard a few other minions players talk about this over the years, is, as you say, because of how diverse Will Work for Food is. there's just so much choice in there that you kind of look at the other two options and you go, is there any need really? I think, to be honest, things like Blind Water have probably been hurt even more by the update, because, for example, Posse have now gone up to 8 boxes standard anyway, which used to be a benefit of Blind Water specifically, right? So it's elements like that where you think, okay, there's not really anything there helping them. Sure, there's probably some corner case scenarios where maybe you might say, oh, I'd love to take 3 units of slaughterhouses. So that's where you go to get your slaughterhouses. You go to Filmfall. And it might well be a case of, you go, I'd love to run some Croak Raiders. Well, you've got to go to Blindwater to get that. But those couple of units aside, and they're not meta-defining units by any means, there's not really much in the way of, you know, a driver for you to go for those, but will work for food, for example. There's just so much range and so much adaptability that, it's pretty impressive when matched with some of the quite strong casters that you can get in Minions.
It's that, and the theme benefit is probably the strongest theme benefit in Minions as well.
Yeah, Overtake on Beasts.
Overtake on Beasts is just so strong, combined with something, say, the Squids, or even some of the pigs.
Arcadius is a clear example for that, you know, one of the massive things is Overtake for enabling his assassinations. It's so powerful on those Warp Course heavies, which do stack quite a lot of buffs.
And the other thing that you've got to remember is, World War for Food also gives you the ability to upkeep Pigpen for free on Rorsch. I mean, that's gold dust. I mean, that's probably worth the theme, you know, on its own. Never mind Overtake.
I mean, if we're going to break down, you know, Rorsch and Brine, they cost 14 points, but a good 8 or 9 points of that is Rorsch himself, of course, you know. Brine is just the nice one to have at the end, because he goes off, you know, and maybe he does some okay punching stuff as a heavy, but then once he goes down, Rorsch just goes full-blown Taken, pulls out his dynamite and pistol and starts taking heads. Absolute beast.
So we were watching, I was watching some games on the weekend, I was judging, and I watched a couple of games that Jamie played with Rask, and Rorsch did so much work every time I saw him on the table. It was ridiculous. He'd just sit there and he'd, what's the way that you put it? He Liam Neesoned it.
He does. When you've killed his pig, he's coming for you, and he killed, ironically, into Retribution, actually. He killed full unit of Electromancers, a couple of the random mechanics, bits and pieces, throwing dynamite into other stuff.
He just cleared a zone. He cleared a zone, in one particular turn. Like, what the hell is going on here? Like, this pig is quite literally dynamite.
Exactly so. So yeah, that's one of the big parts there. What it does lead into is probably the natural design choice for Minions, which is, when you've got such a breadth of options, you have to be careful with the casters, because a caster that carries a lot of innate power themselves becomes disproportionately stronger in a faction that gets more releases with weird synergies that aren't really factored into the game, because Minions is also designed to work with other things. And I think what that leads to is a fairly polarizing caster balance within Minions, and the ones that stand out are clear. It's Rask, Azazello, arguably Helga 2 and Arcadius can claw up there, but really Rask has been the main one, and Azazel has had his time as well for the just Minions casters that have pushed the power a little bit higher than their others and become pretty impactful in the meta, I think.
Could you argue Maylock to a degree as well? And probably as a one potential standout in terms of the other themes. Because in Blind Water, I mean, being able to just spam Gate of Men Posse, you do see it of occasion, and you have seen it of occasion in competitive pairs over the course of the past few years.
The thing I always found about Maylock, and it's difficult to see, is that I think his potency has actually gone down since the update, with obviously the changes to the Archons and kind of increases. Obviously, there's a less floating about, mainly Archons with Maylock. And that was an extremely powerful list, making them all undead and putting their armor up. etc. was particularly strong. I've always felt that the Blind Water list has always kind of been caught in the crossfire, if that makes sense, from other kind of lists which have done medium-based spam or kind of armor spams better than him. I might be wrong in that sense, but that's how I've always felt as a Retribution player, that if you could answer, say, I don't know, Troll Champions with Madrek 1 or Madrek, was it Madrek 3 at the time? I can't remember Madrek 1. You could answer that. I don't know. I always felt that you answered kind of. I can't remember who we're talking about now.
Maylock.
Incidentally, if that makes sense, by preparing for the rest of the meta.
I think you're right, and I think probably the telling part is when Maylock was sort of a real stable minion pairs, you weren't seeing him in Blind Walk, you were seeing him in Will Look for Food, because
that's true. Yeah.
It would give you all the options of things that he really wanted. You know, he would normally take two Primal Archons, two Void Archons, the Hermit, maybe two or three units of Valkyries, who are fantastic infantry, and because his kit worked better on these sort of harder to manage, these powerful solos, I think that's where we saw him cut more. And it's probably contentious which of the two theme forces he would go in now. I think there's arguments for both, but it would go back to the first point, which is the Will of Food only grows in power the more releases goes in its current format. It's not until something like Irregulars happens, whereby there's a fundamental change that caps a lot of what can go in it, that that you see that strip off.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah, it probably is, to be honest. I think it's in order to open up Thornfall and Blindwalker, you need to relook at World Food, or you just create another theme force which is just as broad because you open up another 20 casters to the faction.
Whatever could you mean?
Let's talk Vengeance of Dunia then. Vengeance of Dunia is a rare cross-faction theme for a number of reasons. First of all, it makes everything friendly faction to each other. You don't always see that in some of these cross-faction themes. Things like Disciples of Agony, Oracles of Annihilation, some of the Secret Masters, they don't bring that friendly faction tag to when you smash two factions together. Secondly, you can take any caster from either Troll or Minion stable whilst playing your requisite faction, which means you can combine someone like Rask with someone like, let's say, Kolgrimmar, which having been and ridden that trade for a couple of months now, is an incredibly powerful combination. You add on that with taking what was certainly at the time of release probably the best units in Trolls. The champions were in there. You had access to a lot of the really good powerful solos like Boom Howler. And then you also included key components like the Valkyries, Dunian Archons. And you just smashed together both sets of Warbees for this incredible toolbox. I think Vengeance of Dunia really opened up Minions options wise, and Trolls arguably, but I think out of the two, Minions takes a lot more from Trolls than Trolls does from Minions. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'd largely agree with that. And when I first saw Theme came out, I thought, what are PB thinking here? It's kind of it's just going to make Minions in particular just far too powerful with the flexibility that they already had, stretch even further by accessing a lot of all buffed effect Troll stuff as well, obviously with the Goody 2 pre-nerf and things. It was just seemed that there was an awful lot that kind of Minions were gaining at that point, and they have, but at the same point it's helped them competitively with some of the nerfs that they did receive, obviously with the changes to Archons and stuff. And I don't think they're in an egregious place at the moment, pending new releases. But it's made them into a very strong choice for a faction.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be interesting if they had released the faction without also opening up the Trollcasters to the Minions players. Still let them take the war beasts, still let them take the units that are working together, but not let you combine someone like Rask or Malok or Azazello necessarily with the Trollkin counterparts, because that's a huge caster stable that gets opened up.
I think it's things like getting access to, Goody 2, a prime example. There's nothing in minions like that at the moment, so having access to that in your pair is very powerful. You've also got, I mean, thinking back to Chris's point before about you look at like Malok and Blind Author, let's say, you've just got better versions of that in Trolls now. I mean, we were there talking before we started the cast about Madrat 3 and the various kinds of medium-based spam that you can get there now. You know, what's the point of having something like Malok in there if you've got something that can really push armor and medium bases that hard?
Yeah.
And something I would say, if anything were to change with Vengeance of Dunia, say they were trying to pull up your Thornfalls or your Blind Walkers, is that probably some additional restrictions are potentially needed. So, like, whether it's Scorn-S, like, obviously you can take beasts with you, kind of Scorn casters, and they become friendly faction, effectively. Or, like, elements. But, yeah, I think that's where the issues are with how kind of it's effectively just added to the faction by 50%, if not more. I don't know if anybody's done that maths of kind of what amount of models and entries that minions have gained from Vengeance of Dunia, but it can't be far off 50-60% in my opinion.
Yeah, that definitely. Sort of to wrap up our piece on minions, I think that's really what we're looking at. The strength of minions is you have these two very flexible theme forces that have a huge variety of powerful models that become friendly faction in ways that they weren't necessarily originally imagined to be, which creates some awesome combinations, in my opinion. I'm a little biased. But creates some really interesting combinations, and the thing that I think has really kind of pushed them up into this A tier, this top kind of five of the factions, arguably, is the ability to take the Trollcasters too. It lets them take powerful gun lines like Gunny 2. It lets them take control casters like Cold Grimmer. It lets them take some real nasty defensive casters like Madrak 1. It just opens up a whole other toolbox of caster stables that really complements the minions. The minions trick that was doing well before, but it was really just will work for food as hard as you can. Cool. Have you got any final thoughts on minions in a general sense before we go over to the pointy ears?
No. Nothing to add at the moment.
All right.
Let's do it. Cool. Let's get on to the racist elves.
Yeah, now we've done the fun stuff. You know, we've all had a nice laugh about, you know, pigs and crocodiles getting together and having fun. Let's talk about retribution. Chris, what do you reckon is the strengths of retribution at the moment?
So, retribution, obviously, kind of, I've always kind of seen them as largely an answer faction. So, whether that's through kind of Assyria kind of having answers to gun lines through Blinding Lights and kind of helping her army speed up, as well as kind of turd polishing any model basically with her feet, etc., and Blinding Light, or kind of you've got your Kalissas being able to see through anything, or your Strike Force, they've all kind of rotated through the meta and been able to be flexible kind of with the elements, and kind of getting the Alpha Strike was always Retribution's kind of thing. But then obviously we had the dynamic update, and kind of Retribution kind of all of a sudden kind of had a significant kind of buff and kind of variety brought to them, I believe. Obviously with the Shield Jacks going all up to Defense 13, that was massive. Going from 12 to 13 in a defensive stat, especially on a heavy, is a big deal. It's makes them significantly harder to remove. Obviously, the changes to Rissavas was massive, and it's kind of become a faction defining kind of unit.
Which, along much to everyone's kind of disappointment. Yeah. I have my thoughts on Risavas.
I'm well aware of your thoughts on them.
But, we all have thoughts.
it's just made the faction very different, and kind of obviously with the addition to Falseer, we're able to ask some questions now in return. So obviously I know there was always questions like Raven and the Nine Voices and things in Mark 2, and Viros 2 was a kind of a question, I suppose, but it was never something that kind of I felt the faction relied upon, whereas now it's kind of, in my opinion, Gorshed 4 is probably one of the strongest casters that Retribution have, and that is very much a question that you have to be able to answer, whether it's two units of Risavas and kind of that are hitting you back and you're made stationary when you kill one, which can then potentially recur. It's a horrible topic which you've got to try and get out of. So lots of options. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think for quite a long time, people, if you ask someone, say 2 or 3 years ago, you know, what do you do about Ret? They'll say, well, actually, this is my answer to Tridents. And Tridents were such a dominating part of Ret's play, and arguably were the only parts. There was a brief period where Legions of Dawn was coming back as well with, Sentinels and that. But really, the thing was Tridents, this durable battle engine, very mobile, that had a lot of really, I wouldn't say top quality, but just a bunch of good quality shooting that will chip away at all the things you don't want to and be pretty safe from retaliation. I don't know how long you felt it for Riz, but it certainly seemed like for a year, maybe two, that was Rhett. Rhett was the Tridents.
It was for 18 months. Retribution were always predominantly a shooting faction. Signal light, as some people would say. And it felt like for a period you were kind of finding ways to buff Tridents. I think go back 3 years to WTC. Your most typical pairs you'd see from a Retribution player would be a Syria kind of Gareth 2, and you'd be running 4 Tridents effectively. One was a stealth answer and kind of turned Tridents up, and then the other one was basically abusing mortality with Tridents. Neither of those are so bad still. They still maintain Tridents efficacy. But obviously, the other options have kind of come out of that from the dynamic update.
No, I absolutely agree. I think they're definitely in a much healthier place than they were. I remember the conversations we used to have and various other rep players in the meta just talking about this constant reliance on Trident. And I remember at the time my counter being, oh, poor you. Oh, poor you. Oh, you're still playing Trident. Oh, how miserable for you. Oh, dearie me. As they would remove my army. it's not a good place to be in, right? Considering the amount of models you've got in some of these factions, to be relying on, 30% of your list always being exactly the same, regardless of what list you've got in your pair, it's not ideal. But, you're definitely seeing a lot more flexibility now. I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, I think what we've seen maybe is Rare always felt like it would always do a shed load of medium power guns. There were that power 12, power 13, maybe power 14s, but there would just be so many of them. They were like infantry was a joke. I don't think you ever felt like Sahl 2 was going to be a problem. And so it was very strong in this quite linear way, and there wasn't the depth in the other option of the faction necessarily. Probably the exception being Viros 2, I'd have thought, with all the Griffins, to do something a bit different with it. But generally speaking, it was we're gonna apply loads of mid power shooting with you and just attrition your way through it.
And then Jamie, like with Viros 2, people were typically at least taking one Trident for the flexibility and the gunpower.
Oh, well, of course.
So, I mean, Verse 2 did drop off largely when the Triumph came out, because he did get kind of hit by kind of obviously not benefiting as much from Double Trident, but also from the fact that he was getting hit by other things that were in the meta, dealing with high armor, etc., Yuuzhan 2s, etc., and things,
yeah,
getting through boxes and things that he got hit by that as well, in my opinion. So, yeah.
I totally agree, but it always seems strange to me because he gives veteran leader to the stupid things for some reason. And it was giving, you know, it's like saying to a Legion player, oh, you know, you don't really want a Seraph, do you, in that battle group heavy list, you know? Oh, do you want Slipstream for this, like, you know, just in case the Griffins weren't far enough? But anyway, that was then. I think Riss of Ass are clearly a very, very powerful unit that actually do quite a lot in a meta, which we'll get into a bit later. I think I have a lot of really interesting answers into there. Broadly, a very solid stable of casters. My feeling from an outsider looking in is that Rep probably has one of the best internal balances of casters in the game. It doesn't feel like there's anyone who's really behind the curve, or anyone who is, if you're not taking this caster, you're just lying down.
Yeah. The Retribution casters have always felt like kind of Swiss Army knives. Probably got to take one of maybe the top three or four casters. So your Assyrias, your Falseers, your Gorshades, Kalissas. You probably want to be taking one of those in a pair. But then, according to what you want the pair to do, you could probably take anybody, maybe with the exception of Alara and Ferris One. I think they're only the real stinkers of the faction, personally. But yeah, even your Ossians, your Ravens, there's interesting things that they can bring to the game and bring to a pair to deal with certain questions, as it were.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's something that's important when we come into sort of, you know, lining these two factions up and starting doing this list pairing, is it's not very well telegraphed what the casters are going to be when Rhett comes across the table. It might be Gorshade 4 with maybe an Assyria or a Gareth. But it could very easily be Kalissa in there. It could be Falseer in there. It could be Gareth 1 in there, potentially. And you'll still occasionally see things like Rahn in there and Vyros 2. You know, some of the casters that have been just generally good at the right times for a lot of these ones there. Even you know, Raven and Ossian have their places too. And I think it's quite hard to prepare for Retribution because Retribution community doesn't seem to have really kind of settled on this is what our tournament staples are going to be. Maybe Gorshade 4 is the current standout, but I wouldn't be surprised if that changes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that. The problem with Gorshade 4 is a lot of the answers to things like Madrak 1 kind of semi-answer as, do I mean Madrak 1? I mean Madrak
3,
don't I?
Yeah, so Madrak, you do.
Kind of answer Gorshade to a certain degree, obviously depending on wording of abilities for kind of anti-tough and things like that, he will get hit slightly with crossfire there, but I'll go more into his the finesse of Gorshade a bit when we get to that part. I don't want to digress too far.
Yeah no, for sure. And I do agree. I think there is a risk, same as also the Tridents, is sometimes there's a habit of, oh, this is a good unit, this is a good model, let's windmill slam two of them in there and push it through, which is fine, yeah, as long as your skew is powerful enough to resist a little bit of swinging teching. And I agree. I think it's a bit like we're talking about Maelok. You know, he got caught up in the storm of, you know, dealing with champions. I think that there's an element that things like Riss of Ass, you know, that single and wound infantry spams, and that will potentially get caught up in the general response to those big single wound infantry lists that are floating about at the moment. Cool. Okay. You guys got any more thoughts on Retribution generally? Anything else that stands out to you? Something that's keeping them well up into the top sections of factions in the game at the moment?
No, I'd say it's a different level of type of flexibility from minions. Obviously, we're very limited on kind of mercenary and minion choices, but it's very much caster led. The flexibility, whether you if you take Kalissa, Falseer, Gorshade, and Gareth, they're all playing a very different game plan. Significantly.
No, you go for it, dude.
One of us have to go.
Yeah.
We're too polite on this cast.
But they're all playing very, very different styles of play, and that's only within two themes, largely. So, I mean, that's maybe something we should discuss, is obviously the reliance on largely two themes for attribution.
Which themes are those, sorry?
So, Defenders of Ios, which again just seems to kind of be a catch-all. Does it fit in Dawnguard? No. Does it fit in Shadows? No. Is it a Warjack? Yes, but still. Then, yeah, we'll put it in Defenders. So you've got such a vast selection of infantry and solos in that theme. It was always going to be one of the stronger themes, even with mediocre theme benefits. Being the wall, effectively.
Isn't one of the theme benefits Repo 3?
Yeah, Repo 3 on, yeah. That's probably unfair, I would say. I'll just take that for granted, because obviously I'm only really playing in Defenders and Forges. And obviously Forges is a lot less solo heavy, as it were. So, yeah, it's a decent theme benefit. The wall, less so. Yeah,
I mean, I can certainly say that the Retribution Hermit privilege makes him very difficult to go back to a faction that doesn't have Repo 3 on that nice little AOE 10 -5 armor buff.
That's before you start slamming around with your AFGs and your tridents.
So. what would you say are the main problems with the other two theme forces then? What's stopping people from playing Legions or War Shadows?
Let's quickly go through Forges first, obviously with the two positives of kind of factions. So Forges is strong due to a very strong theme benefit, being kind of obviously Shield Guard and all the Jacks. I mean, that's the only theme benefit, if I remember correctly. But it's a big one. It's effectively on a Jack based theme, it just is so strong, especially with the faction kind of character Jack is Discordia as well. So you've all of a sudden, without much effort, you take any caster in that theme and it gives you a certain level of gun protection. You start throwing things like your Virus 2s or your Sirius in there, all of a sudden you've got an anti-gun line list without much effort. I don't know whether you two agree with that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it mirrors across to Venge of Dunia. One of the things that I didn't speak up about there is the fact that you end up with two trenches and things like Gudrun 2. So that list very quickly becomes quite naturally anti-shooting. And I think Forges does something very similar. You, just by playing in that theme, you natively bring along a lot of things that makes gun lines have to work a lot harder into you, which is valuable in a world with Crucible Guard, with Thamorite Archons.
It's pretty oppressive, to be honest. The resistance to guns that you can get in that list, and you probably talk about it a little bit later anyway, but when you're looking at lists like the Falseer one that was doing the rounds when she first came out, and you've basically just got this essentially unshootable super solo, it could be quite impressive, like I say.
Hashtag nerf too,
but good.
I stand by. I still think she's one of the top casters, but AI.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but I still think.
Hashtag side nerf.
Yeah. that's more where we're going at, I think. What were the issues with Shadows and Legions then, in your opinion?
Legions in particular just feels that what they bring. So starting with Legions, the theme benefits are mediocre at best. So Jacks get flank infantry. It's kind of with not great Jack Marshals, it's kind of a bit meh. Obviously you can do some fun things with Griffins and things, but it's nothing kind of stand out. And Sentinels kind of haven't stood the test of time with infantry, with them being quite slow. Armor on single wound infantry is kind of not particularly something to be worried about. Armor 22 kind of Sentinels, yeah, for a turn, kind of they're too easy to ignore. I mean, they're natively threatening 10, you can get them maybe up to 12, 14 on a single target potentially. They're just not as good as any of the infantry choices that you're going to find in Defenders. There were some interesting lists with Desters and things like that, but the models are just typically too expensive and not good enough at what they do. I mean, Sentinels hit like trucks, as everybody knows. It's just they either die or kind of are ignored for a large chunk of the game. And along with the fact that kind of theme benefits aren't particularly great, it's just a bit kind of meh, as it were. And that's probably the least likely theme you'll see kind of played in Retribution. Shadows is a weird one. Shadows, I think, is feasible, but you are very much teching into certain things with it. I mean, you could make a great anti-Madrat 3 list in Shadows, but at the same point, you bring yourself at massive risk if there's a Gunny 2 or Blasts or kind of... It's a list that you're going to struggle with kind of into. Takedown's a great benefit. Mass stealth for the theme is pretty good, and there are some really cool solos with the likes of Narn and kind of Mage Hunter Assassins. Eris 3's quite good now, but it just for some reason just falls short. The utility in the theme isn't quite there, so you haven't got things like your Artificers, which would have been nice, obviously, for the blast immunity and the defense buff. And it just feels a very, very fragile theme. The reroll to get stuck first is nice. I've seen some interesting builds with the likes of Falseer, and maybe even Alara 2. Make those...
and Firin, of course.
don't get me started on that. I forgot to put him in the poor category. Yeah, so there's maybe something to unlock on Shadows, but unfortunately the other two themes just effectively build themselves and are a strong baseline, as it were. So whereas with Shadows you've got to work a lot harder to get the benefits out of the infantry and the solo choices that are available.
Yeah, I think I really agree with what you said about it being a tech choice. It feels like Shadows is something that you'll go into when you want to answer a specific kind of list. And it can answer quite a lot of lists if you build it that way. But I don't know if it's got the versatility to warrant taking it over something like Forges or something like Defenders in a pair.
I mean, if we were getting back into reoccurring infantry or something like... I remember Assyria Shadows being one of the big lists at the start of Mark 3 when Ghost Fleet was kind of tearing up the meta and was one of the only kind of slam dunk kind of answers to Ghost Fleet. Because obviously with the Blinding Light and kind of Strike Force having magical shots, etc.
Pretty strong.
It was a really strong answer. And obviously the takedown in the theme... get into that. Yeah, but unfortunately it's kind of not stood the test of time, unfortunately, since then.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Okay, well, you know, interesting that we've sort of picked up two factions that are really kind of dominated by two theme forces, with arguably some mirrors, you know, one very wide open theme force, defenders and world food, and then one with a lot of inherent power, particularly with an anti-gun line sentiment in Vengeance and then Forges. And I was actually thinking, you know, maybe, you know, with your Crix experience on, Chris, you could almost compare it to Scourge in Black Industries as that similar kind of dynamic. But
yeah, absolutely.
Rather than get off topic on that, we'll save that for another time. We'll still focus on these two. Cool. Any final thoughts, remarks on Retribution?
I think that's me done.
Not going to pretend that I know more about Rhett than Chris. So, yeah, nothing to add on what he said. Pretty exhaustive.
I've been pretending this whole time, but fortunately he keeps me honest. Cool. Okay. So, what we've got to do now is we're basically going to go down talking about as if me and Chris were going to rock up to a tournament together. I've got my minions. He's got his Retribution. And go through a couple of iterations of, okay, if we've got this pairing down against each other, what are we going to drop and why? And I think the first one is probably to take our current pairings, because A, we've done this one a couple of times, and it's probably the best place for us to talk with an informed sense of what we know about our lists. Chris, what's your current pairing in broad terms, not necessarily model by model, but broadly speaking?
Okay, so at the moment my pairing is Gushhead 4, Double Risavas kind of wardens. Been playing around with a few different chat packages, always including Art Node, and then at the moment I'm currently pairing it with Gareth 2 with the old style defenders list, so double tridents, AFG, double electromancers, and using and going down that line, mainly for your Mandrak 3s. is the plan, and hope, and maybe even a way of playing into having some game into Karchev too. So obviously the old style got Gareth 2 list, so I played it a lot, so it's something I can kind of fall back on as well as that Gushhead 4 list. Is that enough detail, or do you want a bit more?
I mean, to be honest with this part, I'll probably pass it more over to little Chris as our adjudicator to stop us from getting too full of fans, but that's perfect enough information for me. Unless, Chris, you want to hear any more detail about any specific interactions in the list or anything?
No, I think it's good. It's pretty horrible, pretty horrifying, all told. So I think people probably get the general gist of what it can do, but we'll probably get into it a little bit more in depth when we start comparing them both, right?
Yeah, sounds good. Okay, and for me, my pairing is the same as those who listened to the previous cast, more or less. I'm taking Rask in World Up for Food with a fairly standard battle groups. So he's got a couple of Rasslers on him. I've got Barnabas Zero running two of the Murder Squids, the Swamp Horrors on him, because I'm greedy like that. I've got a couple of Primal Archons in there. Some control elements, Rorsch and Brine, and then a mixture of the solos like Quack and Garb, the Ghost Doctor, and the Hermit, Boomhauer 3. It's just a couple of utility solos that really deliver these four or five heavies. That's paired with Cole Grimmer in Vengeance of Dunia. She's got sort of a toolbox of lights and heavies with the Spire Troll, Storm Troll, and Mauler. And then the big one is Madrak Zero running the Mountain King for that Armor 23, Spell Immune Mountain King, along with a powerful control feat and a Workhorse caster. And then the rest of it is just support around that, really some shield guards, the stone and things like that.
Okay.
Cool. Cool. Thoroughly frustrating list, the pair of them, for different reasons.
Okay, so, well, what we'll probably do is in turn, just go ahead and present like initial thoughts. You know, what do I think as a minions player looking at Rhett and vice versa? And then maybe I'm thinking of little Chris, if maybe you throw in some facts, like, okay, well, this could be the scenario you're playing, this could be the terrain you're playing, and then how that might adjust our initial impressions. Chris, Big Chris, do you want to go first and just say, okay, you've seen me down Cole Grimmer and Rask across the table from you. What are you kind of thinking?
So, my initial thoughts, having played the Gogrim list a couple of times now, is it kind of does feel a little bit less chickeny to a certain degree. Obviously, from my point of view, if I'd probably want to get Gareth 2 into Cult Grimmer, mainly because obviously Mortality is good into the Mountain King. It can reach out to try and get hold of Madrek Zero. I mean, there is obviously always the chance of kind of Cult Grimmer trying to assassinate Gorshade, but vice versa. Colgrim has got to be very aware that Gareth's on the table to try and get hold of her as well, because obviously with the powerful guns that there are in the faction. Having said that, actually, come to think about it, I've completely forgotten about Colgrim's feet. Obviously, shooting down guns. So,
about to say
that basis, I probably have to drop Gorshade. I think Gorshade's probably fine. It's just obviously I've got to play around the Mountain King, obviously with the cold immune kind of stuff into Cold Grimmer, so the sprays are going to get limited kind of traction that the sprays assassination is effectively off with Gorshade, and obviously Rask relying on heavies and kind of war beasts, the feet is quite strong still into that. I know there are some interactions which kind of stop some of the Rissavas's tech, but still, obviously, the feet is still very strong into Rask, because all I'm going to do is effectively push infantry at you, and I could potentially make the defense quite high as well, which is something traditionally a Rasklist can struggle with.
So remind me just quickly, Jamie, in your Cold Grimmer list, what theme was it in? Pod or pod?
Vengeance of Dunia, because I'm in minions here, yeah. So it's
you haven't got
Mulg in this one now.
Okay, and I thought that was interesting because it's fundamentally this was the other thing that was foxing me a little bit with Chris's view of maybe dropping Gareth into Cold Grimmer to begin with, not just the feat, but of course Mortality is an incredibly powerful spell, particularly against Colossals, because he can actually shut down the healing, but not in this particular instance, because Owl's Wisdom, I would imagine, in that matchup is going to be solidly on the, you know, the Mountain King for most of the game, because you still want to be able to benefit from all that whelp shedding and the healing goodness. I think what's interesting about it is that in your pair, Chris, you've actually got a couple of quite strong debuffs, which I'm not used to seeing necessarily outside of Pricks. So you've got that, and then you've got Hand of Ice, I suppose, with Gorshade. And those are the kind of two of the big kind of like, you know, armor swings, I suppose, that you'd need against something like, you know, an Armor 23 Mountain King. But in that instance, you can't apply either of them. So I think that's got to factor a little bit into the way in which you approach it, right?
Yeah, and I agree. The problem is, as well, with Owl's Wisdom, it's... Obviously, it's on one target, and obviously with things like the Gareth 2 list, it can reach out. It can reach out to the likes of Madrak, especially kind of with things like Tridents and kind of Gareth himself. So got to be very... It's a very kind of thought, kind of heavy game for the Colgrim play, which it already is. It's my misthought on how kind of... on the feet was the big one, really, because the Gareth 2 list is 95% guns.
He's a little bit afraid of the assassination from Cold Grimmer as well, I'd imagine. Where does he like to play normally? Does he like to play backfield, midfield? Like, what's he?
He can be relatively flexible, especially with kind of like depending on terrain. With him having kind of Repo 5 base himself. Ideally, if he can play from behind a building and kind of come out and shoot either with a trident place and things like that. He's natively had quite high defense, defense 17. I know that's not necessarily enough with Colgrim.
It's not.
But it is something to consider.
It is, yeah, true.
Yeah,
as well.
I think just to build on that as well, I agree with the assessment. And whilst the the Owl's Wisdom protects the Mountain King most likely from mortality. And I've got things like shield guards with the Valkyries to stop him from getting Witch Mark on targets he wants. Golgrimmar has to respect the fact that she's, you know, she's a 14, 15 caster, and she's gonna have, she's not going to be able to move up the board. She doesn't get the value out of her clouds with things like Mage Sight. So she really has to respect the fact that whilst she can probably play quite aggressively with the Mountain King, she's also got to be pretty careful she doesn't just get her head blown off by Gareth and his tridents.
That's true.
Or even worse, Amoros getting on top of her.
Yeah. So. Yeah, with Road to War, he gets some silly, silly places.
Especially with the changes of fleet to fleet as well, just makes him go even further. Easier.
Yeah. Yeah. So your thinking is then you'd probably be looking to play Gore Shade into this pair.
Yeah. That's what I expect, and I expect you probably to play Golgrimmar, is my thinking. Unless there's a wonky table with maybe something that Ras really didn't want to see. I don't know what that would be. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so just before we swap over to me, because you're playing Shade and expecting me to play Golgrimmar, why don't you think I'll play Rask?
Just traditional kind of thought of kind of how bricks, most bricks outside of Karchev and the like, struggle into kind of Gore Shade unless you kind of get your armor up extremely high. Wrist of Ass hit hard enough. Obviously, with Precision Strike, they can take out systems, and the feat is quite big into the likes of kind of heavies coming in, so your Rorschach, your Bryans. If you're timing the feats correct, you can take that scenario advantage off a brick player. And I'm not overly bothered about Rask's feats, because I'm more than happy just to jam defenders down your throat. The typical Gore Shade 4 play. There's a unit of defenders.
Let's poke on it. let's say it was a less live scenario. Would that change your approach then? Maybe if it was Alphace.
It would depend on the nature of the scenario. So Alphace, obviously.
Sorry, invasion.
Obviously, off the top of my head, there's still no flag on invasion, is there? I always get mixed up between. I think I've just probably got to still try and suck that up and try and get some points one turn. And then just hold off with the feet, and kind of obviously Wrist of Ass is annoying. Kind of annoying trait of just sticking around, and I think that's largely Gorshade's kind of gameplay. You take a scenario lead, what with the feet, etc., and you just hold on to that scenario lead as hard as you can with the innate stats and kind of Gorshade's kit. So either whether that's making defenders up to defense 16 with defensive line and the cloud support with the dying breath, etc. They typically stick around for a while, and then obviously you've got the wardens probably coming up behind. They're going to be armor 23 against melee. It's just a very difficult list to kind of shift for a lot of things, and I think bricks fall into that category because of where the attacks are coming from. So obviously Rask typically is running a fair amount of beasts, so obviously limiting them to one attack is quite sufficient for a turn, if they attack at all, which quite often does happen. They just go, it's a time walk, they just stand off because they don't want to be stationary for a round.
Yeah.
So that's my thoughts anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Really interested to hear from the far side of the board as well. And what I'll try and do now is I'll try and kind of ignore everything you've said, so it doesn't end up me a reply to you.
Yeah,
it's not me having seen your homework first or anything. We said at the start, we've actually discussed this matchup quite a bit, and we've played it a couple of times as well. So from my perspective, I'm looking at Gareth 2 with lots of guns and Gorshade, and I don't think that you can risk dropping Gareth into Golgrimmar. Whilst there is some outs, it's not a slam dunk by any means. Losing the tridents for a turn is pretty crippling for them, and potentially Garruskan too, not being able to mortality the Mountain King, and even then, whether you'll be able to get through the damage. Little things like the Electromancers having electric type weapons, but I've got a Storm Troll in there, so I can hand out immunity to lightning to key models if they're trying to bounce things through. The Shield Guards with Dunians.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that is I feel a lot better about that Gareth 2 into Corgrim if I go first.
Mm-hmm.
Because if Gareth can go first and just basically be in the middle of the board, it's almost forcing you to feet turn one.
Yeah, quite possibly.
That's always kind of a miserable place to be, kind of having to feet kind of bottom of one. So, but obviously, in a competitive environment, you can't you can't guarantee something that you're relying on a dice roll that's 50-50. So,
yeah. And I think, well, you know, it's what's the case. You know, I said in a tournament game, you probably wouldn't take that risk because, likewise, if Cole Grimmer goes first, sits in the trench in the middle of the board, and is going to feet on you, on her top of two, push some stuff around, jam the Mountain King down you. I think it's quite scary for Gareth. So I'm then looking. Okay, I'm expecting to see Gorshade. There's a couple of specific things in Gorshade that makes this a problem, and it's largely comes down to his feet and the Rissavas. We mentioned Rissavas with their dying breath. Whenever you kill one, they stab at you, and they've got precision strike. That's really, really bad on power 10 weapon masters into any kind of beasts, because particularly with the weird boxes of minion beasts, you know, things like the Rasslers have five boxes in their mind. It means every time I'm going into your infantry, which are def 14 in melee, by the way, which I don't really have a good way around, I'm running the risk of just suddenly you rolling a spike, taking out an aspect, and I'm trading badly with heavies there.
And the other thing in that particular matchup as well, with Hermit being in the Gorshade list, I'm quite happy to put the Hermit intermingled with the defenders, reducing your armor, because armor 16 is not going to protect my defenders. They're not relying on their armor stat at all.
Nah.
So I'm happily putting Hermit up there, trying to reduce your armor of your heavies as you come in, which obviously power 12 weapon master against armor 18, yeah. 19 is still going to sting.
Yeah, especially as, again, it lasts during my turn, so when I'm then coming back into you and you're doing your defense, your retaliatory strikes, it's now also giving them power 12 weapon master responses. So I just trade, weapon master spam is difficult. The specifics of Rissavas and Gorshade's feet and that, which also, you know, just really ruin it for a turn, it becomes really difficult to chew through that. There are some options out of it, so Snacking, for example, from the Rasslers, does get around Dying Breath. And the Swamp Horrors can do some janky stuff using the tentacles, staying outside of 2 inches to get around the Last Breath, dragging things out of defensive wall, and of course Murderous with Barnabas and gaining arm back can be good. I think the problem there is I'm relying very much on your tough rolls not to come and sting me. And whilst I've got things like, you know, I can potentially knock off Dauntless Resolve off the Wardens as well, it's still just quite a lot of stuff to clear through, particularly on defensive feet. And I think if Gorshade goes first, it's definitely Rask fighting his way out of a corner. If you can just feet in, jam him up. And if it's a dead scenario, I could probably hold out and start to swing it. But if there's any kind of live elements, there's just no way to get into your zone in bunker or in spread the net. So I'm probably going to put down Cold Grimmer. There's problems with it. The mass immunity to cold is a pain because Cold Grimmer's sprays are quite important for clearing out infantry in that list. If you've got soulless escorts on the Rissavas as well, I can't apply Cursed Fate to drop your defense. So now I'm having to use, you know, prestige pieces like the Mountain King or the Mauler to hit Def 14, which isn't very likely. And even though I can probably... I don't think there's an easy way to deal with the Mountain King, even with Hermit, because Hand of Ice and Owl's Wisdom negates the Hand of Ice. I think you can probably just jam up my Colossal from doing in a place and then pressure the rest of the board with this infantry that will probably just run through it if we're not careful.
Yeah.
What you do have, though, in that list are Pyro Trolls and Storm Trolls, right?
Specifically, the Storm Troll was in there to deal with Retribution, because
there we go.
Ability to hand out Electro Leaps, particularly things like the Mountain King, onto, you know, the Mauler, onto even things like, you know, maybe the odd Valkyrie, stuff like that, just to give some more leaps out and just to try and pressure some more of those sides at the end to just try and get a few more extra kills in there. I think Colgrim has to play quite aggressively with Cursed Fate to drop the defense down to let her pieces try and start clearing through. And again, using things like stacking on the Mountain King, on the Mauler, to try and get around those retaliatory strikes. So I think I'm putting, you know, as you guessed correctly, I'm going to probably put down Colgrimmer and look to try and use the feet, my feet, to counter your feet, or vice versa, to keep me alive on scenario, and hopefully drive the Mountain King through your army faster than you can swing on round.
Yeah, and then that's the thing. Obviously, with Cursed Fate, it's a game of positioning, and I think that's largely what the game will come largely down to. I think scenario makes a big difference on who's favoured, probably. Again, like something like Spread the Net, I'd feel like I could probably keep enough stuff out of my own zone and off my flag, potentially, to kind of go ahead on points. I don't know if you agree on that. But again, there's not much chance of me kind of getting that Mountain King off the table. I mean, maybe between Hermit, a unit of Risavas, a unit of kind of, I'm throwing an awful lot to try and kind of remove it, obviously dependent on the kind of heavy package, and even then, with it not being guaranteed, I'm largely better off just ignoring the model, and just kind of let you crawl around and wait for potential openings to get hold of Madrak.
Yeah,
it's probably the play. Obviously snacking stops me from getting a lot of souls, but obviously there are bits and pieces of guns and things, obviously your limits how many soldiers you, for that very reason. But
do you potentially go down the route then of almost like giving him something tasty to send the Mountain King after, just so you can potentially pry him away from Madrak?
Well, this is the thing, there's nothing particularly overly tasty
worth in going for
a list. Yeah. I mean, the thing I think Madrak's scared of is A, getting spelled, been doubled up by spells.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's probably the combination of spells, scythe, and sniper shots, and kind of managing that fury kind of levels between the two of them. I don't know whether if you agree with that, Jamie, with basically keeping enough fury on him,
yeah,
to help him survive, but at the same point getting enough out of the Mountain King. I know he can shed whelps and eat them, but if I'm ignoring him,
yeah,
it's difficult to do that. So it's a very fine balancing point that you've got to kind of address in that situation.
Yeah, I think that's something that's really cool about, you know, we didn't go into the full details of it, but in your list specifically, you have things like ghost snipers, like scythe, that give you some ways of reaching out and touch the back line, whereas other builds for Gorshade don't have that that reach out factor, so I have to be more careful. Madrak's pretty tanky. He's 13, 17 before the stone, and then I've got Dunian Archons. He's always going to be camping at least one, probably two. And I've got shield guards, trenches, guard run. So there's a lot of anti-shooting available to me. But it's certainly something as the game goes on, you know, when I'm having to do more aggressive plays of the Mountain King, that you could consider. I think overall, I think this is probably a fairly even game. I think it does depend on scenario. The more light the scenario is, the more favoured it is for Gorshade, I feel. But I think it's there's some specific things, like, you know, is the priest in there for immunity to cold? If she's not, then you know, it changes things. Is there soulless on the Risavas? If not, I could apply Cursed Fate much more effectively.
Obviously, you've got to remember, obviously, Gorshade's Field Marshal being Arcane Vortex as well, which isn't too difficult to actually apply to Risavas.
Yes,
with the Jack. Because basically they spend the whole game just babysitting this of us. But yeah, no, it's definitely something to consider.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Any final thoughts from anyone on this kind of talk through of this matchup?
Yeah, I think, as you say, it's the first person to make a mistake or get a lucky break, I think, is the big thing about the game. If you have a bad turn of kind of trying to get through Risavas due to tufts or kind of bad hit rolls, that could obviously make a big scenario play. Or if I misposition my arcane vortexes or have a particularly poor turn of tufts, then it can very quickly swing either way. So I think that's where the crux of the game kind of lies.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Little Chris, any passing thoughts?
No, not really, other than what you guys have said. I think, like you say, it can come down to whether or not anyone makes any particular mistakes. You know, if someone gets a little bit greedy with a Mountain King here or there, or opens up a bit of a gap, or potentially gives them far too many pieces in one go, then I think that's clearly where things might fall down a bit. But otherwise, it would definitely be a match I'd like to watch. Mm. So you've got to play it next week now and report back.
Oh, no,
it's the natural next step, guys. Come on.
Yeah, find out whether all this big talk on the podcast is going to actually come off.
Absolutely.
Let us know if you want to see that in the future.
We'll get it on the stream, which we should be sharing with increasing frequency. Stay tuned for that. How about that for a start?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Okay. I think we've done a pretty good number on that one. We've probably got time for maybe one more on through. So if you weren't going to be playing Gorshade and Gareth too, Chris, do you have another kind of pairing that's you know, taken your fancy for Retribution, or you've seen being played by the people that's got you thinking?
So let's say, for example, I'm going for I've seen Kalissa and Virus 2 pairs. So we'll go for that. So we'll play a Kalissa list, probably in Defenders, because Virus 2 is going to want to be in Forges. So I'd probably want to be running her with one. Let's go with two AFGs. Just something a bit spicy. Two Eterne. Obviously, I'm just doing this off the top of my head, so pardon me if I get any points right, and then a slightly lesser version of the Risavas package, so one unit of Risavas, Priest, Aelith Fear, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, sounds. What do you think? So what do you think about it? So that was the Kalissa look at. Yeah. What? Anything else?
So, and then Virus 2, I'd probably be looking at four or five Griffins, Discordia, and probably two Manticores. Probably not fitting Trients in at that point. And then obviously the support packages, so your Arcanist units for free, some Arcanists, and Solos to taste.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, that sounds good. I think from another means one, I think Gunny 2 is quite popular still. So let's slam him in there, you know, in Vengeance of Dunia with Desmond Gubbin and Malvin Mitt. Or Malvin 2, let's say Barrage teams, Dozer and Smig for lucky shots, a couple of Razorback crews, and then I think at that point running up might probably, I think it's then a choice in a War Wagon or Champions, and I think people are warming up to the War Wagon, so let's take a War Wagon in there as well, and I think that more or less rounds out the list. The other one thing I'm going to stick with is probably Helga 2. Who's been making some waves in the Minions community. Probably again Ventures of Dunia, just because she gets a lot from that, and then she runs sort of a bit of a super solo package. She'll take a Roadhog, Pyre Troll, maybe two, a couple of the lights that just got plus two speed, and then Repo 3, some Shield Guards, and Godrun 2 to make a really kind of durable double Dunians. And then sort of a smattering of other generically good solos about the place. So
Helga 2 is what's starting to get me a little bit more fidgety on quicks and making me look back over at Minions again. I played a game with her the other day, and I just I realise just how much fun she is. Like being able to yo-yo your beasts the way that she can, and just the amount of work that she can do personally. Like it's just such a fun list to run with all the elemental kind of like light beasts and then warhogs. I didn't realise how good roadhogs were with her until I played that game the other day. My God, rapport on a roadhog is just fantastic.
Yeah, with the feet as well to move on back, it's a really nice list. Was there anything when you played Helga that you think? So I've given sort of very like big handfuls. This is what she probably takes. But is there anything in there that you think is worth mentioning as well that you would that you took when you played her?
Yeah, I mean the first one that stood out, I would say, would be the Roadhog. The game that I played the other day, brace yourselves, was with two Meat Threshers, of course, because look. Repo cavalry on Meat Threshers. You're waiting for that.
Stay tuned for the meat thresher special edition. We're going to tease it every episode until it happens. When we will talk nothing but Meat Threshers for at least 2 hours. It's going to be amazing. But maybe not too.
Maybe we should have like a reset the clock thing every time we mention it. I mean, as I say, Roadhog really cool. I mean, the list that I'm fiddling around with at the minute has like Warhog, Roadhog, Storm Troll, Troll Axer, Pyre Troll, and a Troll Bouncer. I think the Bouncer's really cool because, number one, you've got a Shield Guard who can just hang around with Helga all the while. And two benefits there. Number one, you've got a Shield Guard within three. And number two, with Escort, she's always got that +2 armor buff off him. The other big thing that he brings is Earth's Blessing, and he brings it, it's 4 points cheaper than the Earthborn. Now you might argue the Earthborn's just better overall, and of course it is, but it just allows you to put in some additional bits and bobs into the list, I find, and just the additional Shield Guard's quite cute. So that's the Beast package, and then I run Gudrun the Wasted, Brug, General Thunderstone Brug, which gives an extra additional +1 to her movement, which really amps up her personal threat. That 1-inch makes quite a difference, actually. Desert Gubbin, because Desert Gubbin's amazing. Boomhauer the Destroyer, because hoof it, it just allows you to, along with sprints on the Roadhog, and naturally on Helga as well, of course, given that you've got the Roadhog, it allows you to also yo-yo another beast, but you can basically, outside of feet turn, yo-yo both of your heavies and Helga, which is pretty decent. Two Dunian Archons, a bunch of Swamp Gobble River Raiders, Dunian Knot, Creel Stone, and the Pharaoh Valkyries. One thing that's always foxed me about Helga 2 is the Creel Stone, whether or not it's worth taking it with her. And the reason why I say that is that, great, it buffs the battle group, it buffs her, it ramps up the armor, it makes it even more kind of like shooting resilient. But given that the army that she's running is so mobile, I don't know, what do you think? Do you think the stone's just too slow? Or I mean, I've got Boomhauer in there, so hoof it helps. But what do you reckon, Jamie?
I've only played Helga once or twice and I haven't really dived into her. But I think the stone is actually probably worthwhile still. I think it's an extra layer of numbers that gets you on up there. It can do things like immunity to effects, which is randomly useful. You know, and with the reposition and the sprint, you can often push outside of that the stone aura and then reposition or sprint or hoof it back into the range. So you're getting the benefit a lot more as a sort of this kind of almost, it always behaves a bit like Circle, I think, where you sort of are going out, you're taking pieces, and then you're coming back again into this sort of defensive formation.
Cool.
But yeah, so look at sort of, you know, Gunny 2, Helga 2 at the moment. And seeing as Rhett went first last time, I think it's only fair that minions go first. So I'll having a look at Vyros, Two Forges, and Kalissa. One of the big questions for me is going to be, is there Rissavas in this? Because Rissavas have retained, one of the few mods that retained true blast immunity, and they've also kept girded so they could hand out blast immunity to a bunch of stuff. This is huge for Gunny 2 for obvious reasons. His entire feat is revolves around blast damage, and Rissavas are pretty good at not dying. So if the rep player has got Rissavas in their list, I think it becomes quite dangerous to drop Gunny.
Even in Forges, because effectively Discordia's had a plus 6 bubble against blast damage, which is kind of massive. Ooh. Well, because obviously still it gives about blast resistance, which unless I'm misunderstood, because I don't very often get given heavy blast lists, but is plus 4 armor against blast damage. So, and then on top of the plus 2 that Discordia gives, that's a plus 6 bubble, which still seems pretty strong.
Yeah, and Expose is a great spell, but he doesn't. First of all, Gunner really doesn't want to cast it because he normally wants to aim and shoot his gun, and it only works on spell effects. So things like Discordia's imprint will not mean I can't get around it. There's artificers as well. Rhett just randomly seems to sort of carry along a whole bunch of vast immunity, and I'd be very sceptical of playing Gunny 2 into there. So what I'd be looking at is I'd be looking at Helga to try and have this very durable caster, this mobile battle group, and to try and play this pretty aggressive game up in the middle with this brick in the middle, pushing out, taking pieces, retreating back into the defensive formation with a stone with all the defensive buffs, and driving this brick of hitting power up through the middle. I think that's where I'd be at from a opponent's side, so I'd be looking at dropping Helga 2. And I think I'd probably expect from I don't actually know what I expect, to be honest, from the rep. I could see arguments both ways for either Virus or for Kalissa. I think that Virus has, you know, clearly synergy, is very good at breaking armor. And he may, you know, want to play that trading game of trying to trade lights for heavies, understanding that Helga can steal some peace trades with her feet, or maybe Kalissa's utility gun is sufficient enough to stop her from putting the board. I think I'll probably have to hand over to Big Chris. What do you think from your end?
I think I've got to drop Kalissa. Realistically, your threat ranges against Virus 2 are just going to be far too kind of egregious for the Griffins to kind of play into. I mean, I didn't say I'd take Lanissa, and there's no Trident in the list, so your Griffins are topping out at 13, and I think you're just far too quick to kind of get around that. I don't know if you agree. Did you say you had an actor in? You typically run an actor, I assume, for Rush with Helga?
Yeah, I think so.
So I just think you hit too hard and too fast, especially if you go first. If Virus 2 gets there first, he's further up the board, then the feats start kind of coming in to, obviously, you kill something, run away, I get to move something closer. It's a bit more interesting. Whereas with Kalissa, obviously, I can dictate when you're coming in with her feet a little bit, so obviously you're not wanting to come into an anti-charge feat, I assume. Obviously,
you'd be wrong.
Really? Obviously, the AFGs give a certain protection to Kalissa if she needs it, so actually either the AFGs are significantly better with Refuge, because even if they get a glancing hit on something with an AoE, they can still trot up the board another 4 inches quite quickly into zones, and then they can even just open up different kind of lanes for kind of Kalissa to kind of pop through and either Refuge back or an AFG Refuge back in front of her. Obviously the control elements that they bring, as well as Kalissa brings with her gun, taking things like battle host off, taking Pour off, even shooting Fury off the stone, it's all interesting stuff that she can do with her gun into that matchup. Especially with regards to the stone, obviously she can still snipe with Energy Siphon being put as an innate effect on the gun. So she's trundling 21 inches, that's threatening with that gun, and if she hits, she can repo about 7 inches. Not repo. Sorry, I've got that wrong. It's 20 inches. She can obviously drop back 6 inches with Refuge, and obviously projection to the feet. So it's all a lot of things that the minion player has to think about.
Yeah, I agree. I think Helga's a bully on the board, but I think you have the Mears player has to be so, so conscious of Callista's gun, because if you do get it through, even with things like Earth's Blessing and Battle Host up on her, a lot of those suddenly get stripped away, and then she's looking a bit more frail. So I think, whilst, I mean, Helga is, to be fair, going to be sat there, you know, in concealment from her moving around, possibly with Gudrun nearby, probably two or three shield guards, so it's not going to be easy. But I think that, a significant portion of her army is just having to castle round her. And if they're castling round her and just protecting her, just to stop her done, they're not influencing the rest of the board. And I'd be worried, again, looking at scenario, I think Minions is, again, trying to drive this walloping brick up the middle. And on a live scenario, she might struggle to contest the edges meaningfully as the game goes on.
And obviously with those turn A to a turn A with the double AFG, they're threatening 16 inches without even moving. And that their guns, you've got to pay some serious kind of respect to, especially with Phantom Hunter
being able to
just dig things out that you haven't paid attention to by putting a shield card near to it, or kind of, if I can get hold of a Dunian or whatever. I don't know if you run a Dunian in that list. I assume you do. And all of a sudden you can find yourself with, or even early game, shoot shield guards off the table.
Yeah,
dig them out and go, right, you haven't got them anymore. And all of a sudden things start looking a bit scary.
I think that it's sort of that, it kind of goes in the hand of the player, but Vents of Dunia, much like Forges, naturally brings anti-shooting with it, but how much are you leaning into that? And I think in this kind of a pairing, I would be expecting Gunny to play into a lot of gun lines on the grounds that he's got foxhole, so he can put, you know, trenches plus foxhole for loads of anti-shooting. His own range output's impressive, so I'd probably be looking for him to almost play like a range game, counter range game, through VOD, and I'd be probably building Helga towards more of a battling off things like circle heavy battle groups, Kador heavy battle groups, more of that kind of let's play a peace trading game with heavies and lights and things, where I'm probably going to win because I can use more movement tools. I think it's probably, again, it's all things are, you know, table scenario dependent, but the more things that, the more terrain there is that Phantom Hunter can work for, the more live the scenario is, and the more resources Helga's having to pull just to stay alive, I think the harder it gets for her to keep on going, to press on up, so...
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, Callista's got to try her very hardest not to die. 16-14 is not going to save you from an awful lot. But still, she can be a little bit of a pain with how she works. And obviously, ignoring concealment, clouds, cover with Phantom Hunter and stealth, she can be a right pain if necessary.
Yeah. And yeah, again, like, Avengers Dunia relies on using the cover from the trenches, using concealment from her exhaust fumes. That's a very big part of her keeping her alive. And I'm not sure against such a serious gun line that I feel so confident with her. So it'd be, you know, I'd probably be doing something like camping high with her, pushing her up there with a lot of it, and then trying to do, you know, some pretty bold aggressive plays, asking the question, can you kill her when she's at maximum defensive positions, and then probably fishing for an assassination, or at least a very big scenario strike, to try and take out some of the jacks. Maybe I'm probably going to struggle to get onto the AFGs without charging and things, but yeah. Obviously, little Chris, you've actually played Helga, and you've actually played her into some devastating Horgul 2 gun lines. Do you have
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on Helga into a gun line like that?
I think like you said, you've got to try and play the hit and run game that she can play. Get out there, pick pick out the targets that you can. If there's any targets of opportunity, then reach out and grab them, and then get yourself back into whatever safety you can engineer. It depends entirely how the Helga list is built, right? So, I mean, if you've got enough shield guards, and let's say you've got, I don't know, Valks with double duty, and then you've got a bit more resilience, it's a bit harder for them to just snipe out those shield guards early doors. But otherwise, yeah, just trying to keep those key pieces, and being able to threaten, the key pieces that your opponent's got. The issue with like the AFGs, as you say, is that you can't really just send a war beast stampeding into them, because you can't charge the bloody things, and you've got no way of actually controlling them. So you've got to be very clever with your positioning to get in on them, or you've got to wait for an opportunity where the rep player does something silly, like putting something near to one of the AFGs that you can charge, and then attack the AFG as a consequence.
Yeah, exactly. I think it gets more difficult, and I know we're kind of crossing into the previous one as well. But Gorshay is probably laughing if he's seeing Helga there. His feet is a counter to Helga's feet, with it making him stationary, and that lots of beasts that trying to come and hit and run, but can't hit and run because they're taking defensive strikes or dying breath strikes, and then it feels like it gets more and more sketchy for her as it goes along. So I think that's my gut feeling on it, is that's probably going to be favoured to Kalissa, unless the Helga player has specifically upped their anti-shooting with things like taking the bouncer, like you said, Chris, for taking double dunes and Valkyries, really going to town on the anti-shooting tech. Does that seem fair?
Nah, I think I do agree with that. But even though I think it's still a good game, just putting a lot of resources into protecting your caster, so it becomes a weird scenario game that if both players been terrified that they're going to assassinate each other. So
peak war machine.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Unless there's got any final thoughts on that one, I think that'll do us for that pairing.
Yep, I agree.
Cool. Okay. Well, we're planning the recording now, so we're approaching the end. Just as a bit of a wrap up for this one, I thought it'd be interesting, just generally speaking, going back to those big oval factions, if you're a rep player playing to minions or vice versa, what are the kind of tools, I think, that you'll want to consider putting into your list to give you a better game, some of these problems or some of these challenges that we've brought out, hopefully, over this. Let's start with Rhett, shall we? If what kind of things do you think are useful or important when playing into a minions list?
I think realistically you're probably playing in defenders against minions, just because the ants, it doesn't answer, but there's a lot of answers in there which help. Having a ranged element to your list, I think it can be very tempting just to make a Gorshade list which has very little / no shooting kind of output. I think having elements just to go snipers, scaffolding out things like hermits or kind of, and Scythe especially, pushing her up to kind of, especially with the NIS package, pushing her up to rat 9 quite trivially are big kind of pieces. Just encourage your opponent to come in, because you want to encourage the minions player especially to kind of come in kind of on your terms. And that's a big thing about the shade list. Other than that, hermits in retribution, especially in defenders, is always a good piece to have.
I agree.
The only thing you're kind of contesting with, obviously, with being friendly faction, getting the repo and the theme benefits. I mean, it can be a bit of a double whammy if you can shove hermit into your opponent's face and go, if you kill it, no spell bubble, which I've still yet to see go off ever, but still obviously makes your opponent stationary. So there's a lot of good tools there, which I think minion players need to consider, because from my experience, minion players are very much wanted to take the pace of the game, but that's feet, kind of your helper twos being fast, so anything you can do to kind of force the hand at all is always beneficial.
I agree. I think the Wrists of Asar are very well built to give minions problems, and that extra bit of shooting as well just helps pressure their support packages at the back, which a lot of minion lists in either World Food or Vengeance are coming with, and definitely requires something. Having the way to reach back and pressure those definitely helps start keeping them honest, because minions doesn't really want to do a fair fight with you. It doesn't want to have slug it out. They don't have the numbers, generally speaking, to keep going.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree.
Cool. Anything else for Rhett you think it's worth bringing up for playing into minions?
Probably drop Gore Shade. is the general rule of thumb. Typically doesn't feel bad. I mean, if you've got a Syrian in your pair, there's an argument, or if you're seeing a particularly gun heavy kind of pairing, but I think Gore Shade for the guns that minions bring has got enough anti-gun line tech to kind of deal with any of that, so play Gore Shade.
There we go, you've had it here. Play Gore Shade. That's easy button, go.
Jamie, what on earth are we doing here?
I know, we're seeing ourselves off, mate. We can't release this to the public. Cool. I agree there, Chris. To flip it on its head, I think looking at minions going into Rhett, I think that you need to have an answer for Wrists of Ass in some of his numbers, because you're likely to see them. Some of the good answers, I think, are things like Void Archons. Their anti-tough is really useful. Otherwise, having ways to reduce their defense down, whether in melee or to let you get things like sprays. I think, you know, Roadhogs, if you can bring them in, can be quite good. Maybe some like Arcadius, where you can Adrenalize or Raw Adrenaline the sprays are fully boosted and recover them back. Maybe those are the kind of things you're looking at there. I think the second one is you really need some kind of ambushes or some throwaway models that can get in and contest those flags. It's a general point for minions, but they can struggle on scenario with swarm model count. So the Pharah Sapper, apart from being hilarious fun, is fantastic just to ambush on, go and contest, and buy you that extra turn or two to clear through the stuff in the way.
Just quickly on that point, I know I mocked the Defender's Wall earlier. Using that, if you are using kind of ambushes to kind of in some ways dictate where your opponent's putting your ambushes by putting it within 3 inches of the edge of the board, you can limit kind of where your opponent can get, even by putting it, if you've got a, say, a building near your flag on one side, you can limit what can get into contest. So consider using it that, because using it for any other purpose usually is just something you're going to trip over yourself, whereas for slowing down or kind of inconveniencing ambushes, it can be quite a potent little tool.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the other one is from inside is look for the assassination. Retcasters are not hard to kill in the grand scheme of things, and minions does have some pretty legitimate assassination runs.
Exactly what I was going to say when you were talking about the Roadhogs, like genuinely a couple of like well-placed Roadhog sprays followed by fire afterwards can just kill Rhett casters.
Yeah, a murderous squid with Veil of Mists, if you're not playing Gore Shade, potentially, you know, Cold Grimmer sprays. I think that minions does have some pretty nasty assassination tools they can do, and it's something to consider. Maybe not as a main answer to Rhett, but something that if you can build that into whatever your answer to Rhett, your response is to Rhett as opposed to an answer to it, I think that can give you more options if you are on the back foot, because a bunch of Wrists of Ass just have decided they're going to roll a bunch of tough rolls today and snipe out all the systems on your heavies and just make you super sad.
You go, I don't want to play this game anymore. But it's a good point there, isn't it? Crystal, Chris will know this better than a lot of people, given that he's probably our premium assassination player in the Midlands meta. He knows that he's well versed in the art of the assassination, and it's when you've got casters that like to cast a lot of spells, that like to do a lot of work, that like to spend their focus and play the game they want to play it. If you've got another list that's making them think, do I need to actually camp some of that focus this turn? Do I actually want to spend Kaelissa, for example, do I want to make all those shots? Do I want to boost all those? Do I want to do this? Do I want to do that? And if it's making them think, I could do that, but what happens if I get a couple of random sprays landed on me? Then it means that they might have to adapt their play and play the game they don't want to play, which just the thought of that can help you.
And just going into the minions, kind of, I agree with what Chris has said as well. Like, you want to be trying to limit the efficiency, especially of some of the other casters. Gorshen,
yeah.
But also, yeah, kind of, you want a caster on the flip side that can either keep themselves relatively safe or can play far back, because Retribution also assassinate incredibly well. Again, if you give Gorshade, it's quite possible to give Gorshade 10, 12 souls in a turn, which all of a sudden means that you're having a 19 focus kind of Gorshade throwing the best part of 8 or 9 nukes at you. And all of a sudden, well, maybe being a bit optimistic there, 6 or 7 nukes at you.
Yeah, it's enough.
can kill a caster quite trivially, or get it to where other things can, a rogue scythe or a couple of ghost snipers can finish a caster off. So you've either got to have defensive tech against that, or something to kind of, or that they can play far enough back where you're struggling to get the tools out. So the other way to play against that is dig out things like Chimeras early, dig out Silas, dig out the guns, so those assassination vectors are kind of getting turned off quite quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the things I think that makes this overall matchup quite a fun one to play, is I think both factions have options and will generally come into these lists with options, and there's no safe spaces for either side. It's very rare that one side or the other will be like, I'm in control of this game, I can pretty comfortably ride this out. There's always those back pocket assassinations, or those big scenario plays occasionally, that they can do, and I think that really kind of makes it the game's enjoyable, honestly. You don't want slam, as much as we joke about slam dunks, we don't want slam dunks, because those aren't so fun to play.
So does that mean we've got another matchup we're going to have to record now?
Oh, quite possibly, but I don't think I want to give the rest of the rep players in the UK the satisfaction of thinking Kaelissa is any good. I had to say it. I've been really good so far.
He went there. Amazing.
Great. Thanks so much for talking that through, guys. Really appreciate it. And for people listening, hopefully this has been enjoyable, insightful, not just if you're playing Minions and Ret, but also more generally into these factions and your own pairing processes. And we'd really appreciate some feedback. And if this is something that people want to hear more, we'll keep on doing it, getting other factions, other representatives, champions of their factions to go and argue out why they think they're better or worse. Otherwise, I think that's all we've got. We've got a event coming up this coming Saturday little Chris is running.
26th of March. So we'll run it at Asgard Games in Warsaw, home of Warsaw Warmasters. So, so we're running two pods of 8 players. And we've also got a bunch of people coming down for just some casual games. We couldn't quite get enough to form a third pod. But we're having a few people come down playing some casual games through the course of the day, and just having a bit of a chinwag and a laugh. So if anyone is free, they're more than welcome to come down and join in.
Absolutely. Great. Thanks for joining me, guys. And to all listeners, thank you. We will speak to you in the next episode.
Thanks, bye. All.